Very much, Anna Lee, for that special music. That first time's always a little scary, but then afterwards, it becomes a little easier each time. Good news, I have all my notes today. I didn't leave any at home. My wife will not be making a mad dash out of here to run back. I double counted before I left the house. I was asked on the way here, do you have all your notes? And I said, yes. And I checked twice. And they are all here. They are all here. So some of you that may have not been here, the last time I had the opportunity to serve, I left 4 pages at home. And I didn't realize it until just a few minutes before services started. So I scratched out what I kind of knew the flow was, but Kathy made a mad dash back to Albany, managed to get my notes, and God blessed it beautifully. I was talking about blessings and the things that take forth. So I had reached the 6th page, the last paragraph. I was on the last line, needing to go to the next page when she handed me the next pages. So it just went right on through. So, 17, naive, outspoken, spoiled a little bit, as they would say, lacking tactfulness. Remind you of anyone? I know you probably think of somebody, right? Might even be thinking of yourself, going, well, kind of sounds a little bit like me. I know I could relate to that. I could relate to that. You know, we're going to take a look at another biblical character and examine some of the lessons that we can learn from his life. Now, obviously, there's going to be a lot more to cover than time allows, so we're going to skip around a little bit and try to hit some of the highlights. But I think there's some things that we have in common and that we can learn from. You know, Mr. Janicich talked about goals and having plans and having a direction. And God had a plan for this young man, and he also has one for our lives as well. This young man was going to experience life with its many facets of ups and downs. However, he must be prepared before he receives the ultimate reward. He had to be prepared. So today we're going to look at the lessons of Joseph, practical application that also prepare us for God's kingdom. And if you want a title, The Pits to the Palace. Lessons from Joseph. The Pits to the Palace. Lessons from Joseph. You know, the story of Joseph spans 13 chapters in Genesis. And again, we don't have time to go through each and every one of them, but we'll take and look at some of the lessons that we can draw from it. And it has lessons that we can apply regardless of age and regardless of what we are doing. Regardless of what we're doing. Whether we're in school, they can apply in our family life, they can apply in our social life, and obviously they can apply in our work life. So let's begin over in Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37. You may or may not be familiar with the story. The story begins here in Genesis 37 and goes to the end of the chapter. And if you hadn't had the opportunity to read it, I would encourage you to do so. Go through and think about what is being discussed, what is happening, what's taking place. Because I'm going to summarize some of these things as we move and progress forward. You know, Joseph's mother was Rachel. She was the great love of her father, Jacob. You know, he worked 7 years to obtain her hand in marriage. And recall that Rachel was not his only wife. He also had Leah, but he also had the handmaidens, Zilpha and Bilhah. In that time, Joseph and his brothers would become the patriarchs, the 12 tribes of Israel. But Joseph, the 11th son of Jacob, became his father's favorite. If you've ever had siblings, have you ever accused your parents of having a favorite? Probably nobody's going to go, yeah. Or if their siblings are there, they might be nudging somebody in the ribs going, you know you were always the favorite. I was always told that with my siblings. You know your mom and dad's favorite. I didn't think I was. I didn't try to be. But nevertheless, in this particular case, God wrote it down had it inspired that Joseph was his father's favorite. We're going to begin in verse 2. And I have a lot of my scriptures already in my notes. And I'm reading from the New King James Version. It said, "This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flocks with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father." A bad report. Now, whether they were actually doing something wrong, or was he in this case of, as we know, tattletelling? I don't know, but he brought a bad report. "And now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a tunic of many colors." So not only is he his favorite, he's now really going to get to stand out. It's not just evident in the way he's treated, but even in the way gifts are given and he's now dressed. You talk about having a target on you as a favorite. But you've got it. "And when his brothers saw that his father loved him more than all the brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peaceably to him." And that's pretty bad. When you hate, it's gone to that level. And can't even speak nicely of him anymore. Peaceably. Treat him well. You know, he didn't realize as a young man that there was a problem with some of his behaviors. He couldn't see things that were about to take place in his life. If we continue down to verse 5, it says, "Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more." If you hate somebody already, how can you hate him even more? I mean, this is really, you know, rubbing the brothers the wrong way. "So he said to them, 'Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. Now we were binding sheaves in the field, and then behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and indeed your sheaf stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf.'" In verse 8, "And the brothers said to him, 'Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?' So they hated him even more for the dreams and for his words." They hated him more, and they hated him even more. "Then he dreamed another dream, and he told it to his brothers." You know, Joseph didn't get it at that moment. He wasn't getting it. He was sharing this information, and it wasn't coming across very well in the family structure, but he wasn't getting it. He wasn't getting it, as they say. He doesn't recognize his offense. "Then he dreamed another dream, and he told it to his brothers and said, 'Look, I have dreamed another dream, and this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me.' So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his fathers rebuked him and said, 'What is this dream that you've dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?' And his brothers envied him." Not only did they hate him, they were jealous of him. I mean, they were now enraged with his behavior. But his father kept this matter in mind. You know, God sometimes declares the end from the beginning, as it says in Isaiah 46:10. And he's making known in a dream something that will come about, but it's not clear just yet what that path forward is. There is this dream, there is this event, these things are happening, but why and how this will occur is not yet clear. Yet rather than behaving as his father did, trying to keep this matter undercover in mind or in humbly seeking understanding, Joseph is bursting at the seams. He's got to tell it. You know, he goes and he reports what his brothers were and were not doing. Now and we know he's the favorite, which increased their animosity, and yet lacking wisdom. And then this growing rift, he tells them of this dream. And he tells them that the whole family is going to bow down to him. He's not batting 1,000 here in high ranks with the family. You see, Joseph, being young and being naive, suffered from a disorder that you might call as cannot keep mouth shut syndrome. You know, he wasn't, again, being astute to the things that he was saying, how he was saying them, when he was saying them, to whom he was saying them, and as a result, it was causing a lot of hurt. It was causing a lot of pain. And an old article in Psychology Today, highlighted situations where silence would be better than talking. So here's seven examples. It'd be better to be silent than talk if what you would say would offend someone without any realistic possibility either of resolving the situation or improving the relationship. Well, they need to hear the truth. So I'm going to just lay it out there on the table, whether they like it or not. Is that going to improve the situation? Is that going to make it better? Or is it going to make it worse? If it would hurt another person's feelings, if it would make you seem defensive, closed-minded, or even cantankerous. Well, just an ornery old person. They like to argue about everything. They don't care who's around. They're going to say it one way or the other. If it would further intensify someone's anger. We've all been in situations where anger's occurred. Maybe we're having a spat in our marriage. Maybe we're having a spat as friends. But we're going to get that one last dig in. Make that one last comment. Because we're just bursting. We got to say it. But it's not going to be helpful. It'd be better to be silent rather than say something that would intensify your own anger, fan your own flames. If it would dignify or give credence to some spiteful individual's degrading of you. Sometimes we can be bullied. Our children have been bullied, or we've experienced it ourselves. And that, again, to continue to add to it, to keep them going, is not good. Or if you engage with someone whose goal is to ensnare you, they've set a trap. They want you to step into it. They've laid it out just perfectly, knowing that you are going to take the bait. Because they know, perhaps, you're going to say something because you can't resist. And it's not going to look well. And it's not going to go well. People do that. I've commented on situations at my work and encounters that I've gone through in life where people will ask you certain biblical questions, controversial issues, in a group setting, because they want you to just throw it out there. They want you to take that bait, because they know it's not going to end well for you if you step in the middle of it. We have to be careful with that. And I think the lesson that we can learn here is that consider the who, the what, the when, and the where before speaking or sharing certain information. The who, the what, the when, and the where before sharing certain information. Start over Proverbs 18. You might want to put a marker in Genesis because we'll be coming back there. Proverbs 18. We're going to, like I said, skip through several scriptures through here, and there's many. If you look up on obviously the tongue or the use of the mouth, when we should speak or not speak. Proverbs 18 verse 2, I'm going to read from the New Living Translation. Fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. They like to hear themselves talk. Verse 6, fools' words get them into constant quarrels. They're asking for a beating. They're looking for trouble. My brother used to say, when I would aggravate him as a child, you keep this up and you're going to be hurting for certain. Because I was the little brother. Just like the little yelping dog. I was just nipping at him. He's like, I'm telling you, keep it up. How about verse 7? The mouths of fools are their ruin. They trap themselves with their lips. Verse 12, haughtiness goes before destruction. Humility precedes honor. Verse 13, spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. And lastly, verse 19, an offended friend is harder to win back than a fortified city. Arguments separate friends like a gate locked with bars. You know, again, using wisdom of who, what, when, where, before speaking or sharing information. And then the information may be 100% truth. It can be absolutely truthful in every way, shape, and form. But is it something that someone needs to know? You know, I'm making up an example here as I stand, is that let's say somebody had a substance abuse issue in life as a young person or as an older person. They've overcome it. Hasn't been an issue for years, and they've shared it with you. Is it something that now it's been shared with me. Is it now something public knowledge that I can go and share it with whoever? It's truthful. They acknowledge it. But what value does it have? What is the purpose? Again, those are questions we need to ask ourselves. And again, I think the lesson from Joseph is that, you know, he, being young and naive, bursting at the seams, didn't take time to consider the matter. God has asked us to be wise in how we conduct ourselves. And so, therefore, we should be considerate before speaking. Let's go back over to Genesis again. Genesis 37, if you put your marker there, it'd be an easy find. Verses 12 through 25, Joseph is sold off by his brothers. They see a caravan approaching, and they decide to sell him into slavery for 20 pieces of silver. You know, his father had sent him out, go check up on your brothers. Apparently, they'd been checked up on too many times, and they're like, here he comes again. Now, he's made all these things, saying we're going to bow down to him. He's the favorite. He's checked up on us. He's given us a bad report. Here he comes again. We got to do something about this. The brothers didn't consider their own sins of jealousy. They even conspired to kill him, take his life. They spoke evil of him. They presented false evidence to their father when they did sell him off. They were using self-justification. You know, in their eyes, he had it coming. All the things he's done, he had it coming to him. That's the words we would hear this day and age. Or perhaps we'd hear those famous childhood words. He started it, or she started it. Have you ever used those words? I have. I didn't do nothing. The self-justification. They were convincing themselves they were doing the right thing in their own eyesight. Seemed like Reuben and Judah were the only two that had a little bit of rationale, because they were like, hang on a second, we don't want to kill him. But it didn't seem, you know, they were included in the list of brothers hating him. So they did have their issues. But self-justification, doing what's right in our own eyes. What does the Bible say about that? How about Jeremiah 17:9? We won't turn there. It's a memory scripture for a lot of us. Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Let's do turn over to Proverbs 14:12. Proverbs 14 and verse 12. Proverbs 14:12 says, there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end is the way of death. And one more, Matthew 7 and beginning in verse 3. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Obviously, these brothers had done something that probably was not right. Because there's no indication that Joseph lied about them. even though he brought a bad report. You read the whole story of Joseph's life, there's nothing there that says he lied or he made up these stories or he was misleading. They had behaviors of that sort. So obviously the brothers had done something, but they couldn't see their own errors. And sometimes we can't see our own either. It's hard for us to see them. Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Now, we first have to deal with our own issues before we try to start telling others or try to help them deal with their own issues. Again, being young and naive, Joseph lacked a little bit of discernment. A little bit of discernment. We have to be careful with self-justification because just because someone else done something, we like to give ourselves one free pass. You did it, so I give myself a pass so I'm able to do something. Right? We've seen that play out, especially as children, when we hold our parents' feet to the fire, so to speak, or at least we think we are. Well, they did it, so I should get to do it, right? No, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. There's no excuse for sinning or breaking God's law. Carl Kester and I were talking a couple of weeks back about different things, and he's experienced in the corporate world or have seen this phrase. If you've been around different businesses, you probably have heard this. People go, well, we'll do it now and we'll ask forgiveness later. We'll act now and we'll ask forgiveness later. I don't think that's something God is well pleased with in a spiritual sense, that, well, he's God, he's loving, he has to forgive, he's all forgiving. So, he'll be okay with it this time. Will he? See, we run this scenario through our heads. We play this game for some reason, and we should not. We should not. The story continues with Joseph in Potiphar's house. You know, he sold off. And the story picks up in, actually, at the end of the chapter, Genesis 37, that he sold to Potiphar. And then the story picks up in chapter 39. We see that Joseph is, again, very successful as you read through the story. But there's a problem that occurs later when Mrs. Potiphar desires Joseph. And he exits quickly. And he ends up in prison. But let's notice a couple of things in this chapter. Genesis 39, beginning of verse 2. Genesis 39, verse 2, the New King James Version. The Lord was with Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph. And he was a successful man. Verse 3, and his master saw that the Lord was with him. So Potiphar saw this. This was visibly evident. Potiphar wasn't going, I don't know about this. Something seems weird or a little bit off here. He saw that God was with him. And the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. In verse 4, so Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. And then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So it was from the time that he made him overseer of his house and all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. A blessing came upon the Egyptian because of Joseph's presence. And Joseph was blessed in all that he put forth his hand to do. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus Potiphar left all that he had in Joseph's hands, and he did not know what he had except the bread which he ate. Like, I don't care. This guy is a blessing. God is with him.
Everything he touches turns to gold. I'm out of the picture. I don't have to worry about anything, because this guy has God on his side. God on his side. In the physical aspect, he reported Joseph to Potiphar, a pagan. But ultimately, who is our employer? Ultimately, who is our employer? We answer to God Almighty. God Almighty. Well done, thy good and faithful servant, applies to all that we do. All that we do. Not just in the spiritual aspect. Are we a good student in school? Do we apply ourselves? Is our behavior one that stands out, that the other students notice, or the other kids notice, that you're different, that you're different? Are we a trusted friend? Are you that person that everybody wants to run to, clings to, is grateful for? What type of employee are we? Do we have to be micromanaged? Do we have to have our manager dictating and watching every little move we make, making sure we're doing the right thing, carrying out our assignments? Are we a blessing to others? Are we a blessing to others? These are questions that we should examine and ask ourselves, and ask God to bless us and help us to be like Joseph. To be like Joseph in terms of the way we conduct ourselves in the lives, in our job, in our school, and friendships. Again, being discreet, and having wisdom, but nevertheless, that people see that we're a blessing to them. Companies see that we're a blessing to them. He didn't know it at the time, but he was applying biblical principles. 1 Corinthians 10:31. Therefore, whatever you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Do all to the glory of God. Would he be well pleased at the end of the day with us, where he would say, "Well done, thy good and faithful servant." With the job that we worked on, the way we conducted ourselves throughout the day, with the people that we interacted with, situations that we had the opportunity to handle. Over this winter break, I got my first experience with missionaries. 7:30 at night. I'm like, who's at the door? I got this sign up there that says no solicitation. It's dark. I probably couldn't see it. But it was two young ladies that walked up. And they were very nice. And took the time to talk with them a few minutes. And I appreciated that they stopped by. I thanked them. But they did. It was interesting in the fact that, as a sidebar, they tried to give me a picture of Jesus Christ. They go, "We want you to have this picture of Jesus." And I said, "Well, I thank you. But please go ahead and keep that." I said, "You do know that is not a picture of Jesus Christ." And she goes, "Well, it's a representation." And I go, "What's the first commandment? You shall not make unto thee any graven image." And then she says, "Well, can you explain something to me?" And she goes, "How do you pray when you don't have a cross or you don't have a picture of Jesus?" And I said, "Scripture says, you shall worship him in spirit and in truth." And I thought I probably could have said, "Well, how does a blind person pray or worship Christ?" Nevertheless, but I was trying to be nice, trying to be polite. I thanked them again for their time, and they went about their way. We talked a few minutes. But I could have easily, and I've done it, and I've told the story before where I got onto one individual. The only excuse I can give is I had surgery, and maybe it was part of the anesthesia, but I really crawled a guy one time that came to the door, and then but my wife got on to me and corrected me and said, Well, actually, she looked at me and she's like, I've never seen you ever like that before. How could you do that to that man? And I said, "I that was really bad." So for the record, I did track that individual down. I found them in the neighborhood. I apologized profusely to them for my behavior and told them that I was in the wrong. I still did not want what they wanted to sell, but I was wrong, nevertheless. But again, we are to do whatever our hand finds to do with all our might to the glory of God, to the glory of God. Colossians 3:23. I got it here in my notes. It says 3:23, and whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. Do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. Again, are we a blessing to others in all walks of life? You know, God's grace was upon Joseph, and for Joseph's sake, Potiphar was blessed, even to the point that he was able to see it. So again, we want to remember the lesson is that we work for God, not for man. We work for God, not for man. Going back to chapter 39 of Genesis, verses 7 through 18, we see the seduction come about. Potiphar's wife notices Joseph. She makes her intentions very clear. Notice that in verse 10, it says that she did this day by day. This wasn't a one-time incident. This wasn't just kind of a passing by, like, hey, something just popped in my head type thing. Day by day. I couldn't find through any commentaries or anything that gave the length of time this may have occurred. But again, it just didn't happen within a day of arrival. Didn't happen within the first week of arrival. There was time that it went by. And perhaps her action started out as harmless and then progressively moved closer and closer until it crossed the line. Until she finally said, well, he's just not being astute enough to pick up on this, so we'll just blatantly push the issue, so to speak. And she grabbed hold of him, and we know the story. He exited. But before this, there was a conversation, and Genesis 39, verse 9 says, there is no one greater in this house than I. This is Joseph talking to her. Nor has Potiphar kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? There's two things here. How can I do this great wickedness? Potiphar had put his trust in Joseph. So this was going to be against Potiphar himself. It would also infringe upon Joseph's conscience. Maybe he knew the stories of family members of past, and he did not want to walk in those shoes. And then it says, and sin against God. So he knew what sin was. He knew that it was a transgression against God's law to take this action. Again, Mr. Janicich talked about setting goals, having a checklist. Maybe we should have a I will not do list or a no list. This I will not do. This I will not say. This I will not think. Maybe there's a list of no's that we will not cross. But Potiphar's wife, she didn't care. She continued to tempt him. Have we ever considered what the possibility or the outcome would have been if Joseph would have went, well, boss is not around. House has been cleared out. She's the one pushing the issue. and justified his own actions. Well, I think we'd all agree that the blessings would have been removed very quickly. Both of them, and most surely Joseph, probably would have been put to death for that action. Or being a slave, he could have worse working conditions. He could have been put into a situation that his life would have been hard and miserable till the day he died. You know, we've got many scriptures or examples in the Bible where not thinking the matter through, acting hastily, can result in consequences that are grave. What about Moses? Do I have to bring water out of this rock? Cost him the promised land, is one example. What about King David with Bathsheba? That just progressively, one thing after the other, got worse and worse and worse. He wasn't getting it. I think the lesson that we have to learn here is maintaining a close relationship to God is a key to have the strength to do the right thing in questionable circumstances. There are many questionable circumstances we encounter every day. Every day, regardless of your age. There are those that want to bring out the worst in you. Well, he says he's a Christian or she's a Christian. We're going to goad them a little bit. We're going to see what's going to happen here. We're going to see. What will they say? What will they do? How about when you're in school? It doesn't hurt to cheat. Write the answers on your hand. I don't know what the new way is or how people would do it. You know, the old days, write on your hand or those type of things. Look across somebody's paper. Cheat. What about misrepresenting oneself on a resume? I have this degree. I have this background. I have this skill set. When the rubber meets the road, they don't. I was just reading in the news a couple of weeks ago about a person that now was facing felony charges over their resume and the falsification of records. What does that say about one's character? Not that big of a deal. Everybody cheats on their taxes. Just a few dollars. Also saw one time in the news where one of these trucks pick up money at the bank or et cetera. For whatever reason, the door flew open, the bag fell out, and money went everywhere. People pulling off the road, they're gathering up the money. They're insured. It's not my problem. They're stuffing their pockets and off they go. It was justified in their sight. They're insured. Somebody else will pay for this. I'm taking the money. You know, Satan is the ultimate tempter. Day by day, he'll present opportunities. Day by day, he'll present opportunities. Most of the time, it's not something blatant that's going to stand out there. It's not something that's just, oh, yeah, that's wrong. You know, we won't buy it. That's absolutely wrong. I'm not going to do that. It's small things, kind that we kind of wrestle with in our minds. It doesn't really say I can't. Scripture doesn't. The Bible doesn't say no. Some people would be okay, but others might not like it. You know, I don't know how I feel about this, but everybody else is doing it. I'm here. See, you ever had those conversations in your head? Wrestled with something? Like Joseph, we need to look at God, what God would think about this. What the ramifications would be, what would be the impacts if we took action or we acted upon it? Would you be okay with it written in the newspaper? Sure, I'll do this and put it out there in the newspaper. Let everybody know my name and address, and I said it. I did it. If you're in school, would you like them to announce it over the PA system? Earl Kinsella cheated on his test today in English. Or whatever, math. Probably math would be a better one to cheat on. Would we want that announced? Probably not. We would not want people to know that we've done something in that grave of error. And if we didn't want them to know, then we shouldn't do it. We shouldn't do it. We need to have character. Joseph had character. Having moral excellence or firmness not to move, deciding we will not do this wickedness in the sight of God and sin against him. You know, Joseph did the right thing, and guess what happened? Back to the pits. He went back to the pits. He was falsely accused, and then he was sent to prison. Beginning in verse 20, then Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, a place where the prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Like, wow, I did the right thing, God, and I'm in prison. I upheld your word. I applied myself. I diligently gave you credit by the way I work, my work ethics. It was visible, and I'm in prison. I'm in prison. Did God forsake him? Did God leave him behind? Verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph, and he showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Again, the character of Joseph is coming forth, and God was with him. God was with him. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. Same plan carried out. It didn't change Joseph's character. It didn't change the way he conducted himself. He kept doing what he was supposed to be doing, regardless of the circumstances he found himself in. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything, just like Potiphar, that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Once again, we can see that God's hand was still with Joseph, and Joseph continued to conduct himself according to the way God would have us conduct ourselves. Life can be the pits at times, can it? Doing the right thing and still be punished. And we probably say, come on, life's not fair. Absolutely true. Life is not fair. But God is always fair. God is always fair. Sold into slavery, thrown into prison, but never abandoned. So I think the lesson we can learn here is doing the right thing does not always lead to physical relief. It doesn't put a bubble around us. It doesn't thwart these things from happening. You know, Joseph stayed faithful and obedient to the commandments of God, even in a strange land, because the Lord was with Joseph. He was successful in Potiphar's house, and he was successful in prison. The reality is that every Christian must face doing the right thing will not always lead to a better outcome. Again, it doesn't put a bubble around us because we obey God and we walk in his ways that nothing will happen to us. Jesus Christ was perfect. Didn't commit a single sin. And yet, he was crucified under one of the most agonizing and excruciating methods known at the time. He obeyed God. He was the Son of God. And we know that it was part of the plan. But life still happened. Life still happened. Being a Christian is not easy. And God tells us that all that follow him will not necessarily have an easy life. Not have an easy life. Let's turn over to 1 Peter 2 and verse 19. 1 Peter 2 and verse 19. 1 Peter 2 and verse 19, and I'm going to read from the New Living Translation. For God is pleased with you when you do what you know is right and patiently endure unfair treatment. Of course, you get no credit for being patient if you are beaten for doing wrong. But if you suffer for doing good and endure it patiently, God is pleased with you. For God called you to do good, even if it means suffering, just as Christ suffered for you. He is your example, and you must follow in his steps. You also notice one other thing about Joseph and the situation he's going through. No murmuring and no complaining. There's a scripture about that. I always thought it was interesting. Is it wrong if you don't like that scripture? Am I murmuring and complaining because I don't like that scripture? Because sometimes we do. I do. But we don't see Joseph going, I can't believe this has happened again. You know, this was wrong. I didn't do anything. I was falsely accused. No example in the prison of going around to the different prisoners going, you know, I was framed. This is what happened. We also don't see Joseph going to the point of going, that's it. I just give up. I've had it. It doesn't matter what I do. It always turns out for the worst. When we have those attitudes, we might want to pause and step back a few minutes and think about, where is God in my life? What is my relationship with God? Is God trying to get my attention? Or, God's always been there. He's still there. Circumstances aren't exactly what I want nor desire, but he's still there. He's still there. Matthew 5, verse 10. Matthew 5 and verse 10. Matthew 5 and verse 10 says, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my name's sake. I mean, we want to make sure that if somebody is accusing us, they are accusing us falsely. But there's no evidence that they can hold against us. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You know, following God and Jesus Christ is not always convenient, and it does have its share in difficulties. And at times it has its persecution. Perhaps you're unemployed and you're looking through the job ads. You go, oh, wow. I got every one of these skill sets. You get down to that very bottom, says, must work weekends occasionally. Well, what does occasionally mean? Is that like once every 6 months? Is it? Start that rationale. Well, God knows I need a job and he'll understand. And I mean, there's a point that we know that people grow in faith. It takes time to take that leap. But if you've been on this path for any number of years, you would know, not that job. Got to keep looking. Got to keep looking. Or I want to be an airline pilot. I want to fly commercial aircraft. Got to fly 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. No negotiation. Probably not the career you want to go down if you're going to continue the walk with God. We can't do that. I'll act now and ask forgiveness later. That's not going to work. Not going to work. The lesson we must learn is that we have to stay the course regardless of the circumstances. Stay the course regardless of the circumstances. If you're in the pit currently or been in the pit, we have to ask ourselves, is God still with us? Has God ever left us? What lessons did we learn and are we learning? And if you're out of the pit and you've been through it, Who were the blessings in your life that lifted you up? Are you thankful for them? And can you, in turn, be a blessing to someone else who might be in the pit at the moment and lift them up and help them through this most difficult time? Let's go back over to Genesis 40. Genesis 40. Said it's good to have that marker. You know, Joseph is not done with dreams just yet. He's given the ability to interpret dreams. He's in the prison with the chief butler and the baker of the king of Egypt. Both men have dreams, and Joseph is astute to notice their despondence. He's growing a little bit. Like, I noticed that these guys aren't so happy. I can see it in their countenance. He's becoming a little bit more self-aware. And he asks them, why? And he declares that God can reveal the meaning, not that he can. So he's now trusting in God more and acknowledging God openly and giving God the credit. And they share the dreams with Joseph, and he gives them, I've got some good news and I got some bad news. That always makes your stomach kind of, or at least makes my stomach queasy when I hear that. I got some good news, and I got some not so good news. Okay. The butler, he's got the good news. He's going to be restored to his position. But the baker, he got the bad news. His dream was revealing that he was going to die. But Joseph asked the butler in verse 14, Genesis 40 and verse 14, but remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. Think of the times we've spent together. You've seen my character. You've seen what I've done. Be a character witness for me. Be a reference. Let the Pharaoh know what I've done. Show kindness to me. And dropping down to verse 23, yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. That's somewhat disappointing. How would you feel in that situation? Like, I applied for a job a couple years ago. It was this person that I'd worked with in the past, shoulder to shoulder, the company that I'd worked at. And I was hoping that I might get my foot back in that door. I had another friend that lived just down the street from me. He took my resume and put it directly on that person's desk so that when they would come in the morning, the first piece of paper would be my resume for a position underneath them. Never heard a word. I talked to the person that hand-delivered it, and they said, well, this person took another job in a different country, so they just basically pushed everything aside and went on their way. I went, wow. I knew this individual, and I thought, well, at least they might have the decency of going, you know, I was passed off to somebody else. Sorry, we've already filled the position. Nothing. Didn't hear anything. So I can imagine how Joseph felt in that situation. Maybe you've got circumstances you've experienced too where you're kind of left hanging. You think, wow, I thought I would have never thought that would have happened. But it did. Or it has. You know, sometimes our problems are not resolved just how and when we expect it, are they? We think it needs to be done this way, by this time frame, under these conditions. We start outlining to God, just take my lead, and all you need to do is bless it, and everything will be great. But it doesn't work that way, does it? God doesn't work that way. He's like, no. You got to have faith and patience. And you're probably saying, those are two things that I don't have a lot of, faith and patience. I struggle with my faith, and I definitely want it right now. I want it right now. But he's going to say, wait. You have to wait. You have to wait. But I think this story teaches us, or brings to light, Romans 8:28. We don't have to turn there. I'll read it to you. You may have had it again. It may be one that you've memorized. And we know all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Now, does that say that while being in the pits, it's good? Doesn't say that. Doesn't say the situation's good, that you should be just as happy as you can be. It can be some tough times being in the pits. It can be some tough times there. And when God is working out his purpose, it's hard to see it when you're there, isn't it? It's usually when we're at the end of it or we're through it that we can look back with hindsight and go, now I see where God was every step of the way. I see where his blessings were. I really wish God would let us see that as we go through. I think we would all be in that agreement with that. It'd be nice if I could see it as we're going through this and I recognize it immediately when it happens. Sometimes there are those things. I'm not denying they don't. But I think there are, for the most part, we don't see it until we're through it. Recall again, this 17-year-old at the time, father's favorite, probably spoiled. He was naive. Inexperience has now come a long way in life. He's had some lessons that had to come underneath his belt. We all will have to have lessons that come forth. I hate to say it. If you never had them, you will. You will. It's a guarantee. But don't be disheartened. Don't be downtrodden, because God has a purpose for those things. Time is a teacher, and it's one that God uses very well. Recall, Moses spent 40 years in the desert being prepared. God didn't just go, okay, now. Moses might have thought, now. And sometimes we're anxious to start right now. But God's like, we're going to hurry up, but you're going to wait. Hurry up and wait. Time. David spent 20 years running from Saul. Paul spent 3 years in the desert in preparation. Time to teach. Time to instruct. Time to grow the character, time to build faith, time to build patience. We haven't gotten there yet, but Joseph will be 30 years old when Pharaoh makes him second in command. Time had to take place. Preparation takes time. The life of Joseph is, again, a good example of how God works out this plan. You know, we may not understand in all that is happening in our lives and why it occurs a certain way, but we can have faith that God will work out all things for good in his time, in his time. Like I said, Joseph wasn't done with dreams in prison. And he's not yet done with dreams, because in chapter 41, the king of Egypt has dreams. Genesis 41, beginning in verse 8. Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. So he's seeking all the wrong people for the answers, but he's trusting all that he knows. And Pharaoh told them of his dreams, and there was no one that could interpret them for Pharaoh. Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I remember my faults this day. Now it came back to him 2 years later. Doesn't it frustrate you when you go to bed at night and you go, something's on your mind, you're like, can't remember the name. Then you go wake up at 2:30 in the morning or one, you know, some wee hour, and you go, oh, now I remember. Well, this is kind of a way out there. 2 years. Oh, I remember. I remember this guy. Drop it down to verse 15. And he's referring to Joseph. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream, and there's no one who can interpret it. But I've heard it said of you that you can understand a dream and interpret it. In verse 16, Joseph answers correctly to Pharaoh, saying, it is not me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Let the glory always go to God. Make sure that he's first. Dropping down to verse 37. And in a space of a short time, you know, he's being pulled out of prison. He's cleaned up. He interprets this dream. Think about the timing. All this other time, you know, time in prison, time sold in slavery, working for Potiphar. You got, what is it, right at 13 years going on here. How quickly things change. Verse 37 says, so the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such one as this man in whom is the Spirit of God? Pharaoh recognized this again. Potiphar recognized it. The prison guard recognized it. And now the Pharaoh recognizes that God is with him. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, insomuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you are. That wasn't how he was thought of when he was 17, telling his mom and dad and his brothers and his sister at that time, that you're going to bow down to me. That didn't sit so well. Now he's described as discerning and wise. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. The Pharaoh took off his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen, put a gold chain around his neck. From the pit to the throne. Just that quick. In a few words. Whole circumstances change. And again, all was under Joseph. To have that care, that he was so trusted, such a blessing, that those in charge just kind of walked away and said, I have full faith in you. I have full faith in you. Are we that faithful that others would trust us? Trust us with their lives. Trust us with everything they own. Are we that faithful? If you look at this, his spiritual condition never changed. God never left him. He didn't slip in his character. He didn't become despondent and said, well, you put me here, you allowed me to be here, so I have one free ticket. He didn't do that. He didn't accuse God. He didn't ask God why. He didn't. We have no record of this. His character was sterling. His character was sterling. When we stay close to God and maintain our relationship with him, blessings will come forth. Not because of what we've done, not because of who we are, not because we earn them. We're given them through the grace of God for his love. But we know that faith and works go together. You can't have one without the other. So the lesson is, obedience to God's commandments brings everlasting blessings. Everlasting blessings. It's undeniable that God's way of life is tough. We can read numerous scriptures and passages to tell us the difficulties and the trials. Hebrews 11, the faith chapter. Every one of those individuals that are listed there, tell me who had the perfect, easy life. Their faith was built by doing what God had instructed them. And that meant enduring whatever came their way, easy or hard or difficult. Whatever it was, they still had to move forward. They still had to move forward. Yes, our Christian walk may lead us at times to inconveniences. Go to a restaurant, you go, pork, pork, pork. Why did we choose to eat here? What is it? Something they got to put pork in everything now? I've been in restaurants like that. Or it's difficult. I've had my, we all do this if working in companies. You coming to the Christmas party? Why not? We're having a New Year's celebration party. My company's having one this month, not on New Year's Day, obviously. It's past this, but they want to have a big company party, and they're like, you're coming to that, right? I'm thankful that I'll be in Roseburg that day. But no, I said, I observe the Sabbath. I can't attend that. Well, it's just a party. We're just getting together. I'm sorry. Any other time, if you want to do it on Sunday, I'd be happy to attend for a little bit. But no, I can't do that. They don't see that. Aren't you going to play football this year? You going to be on the basketball team? Can't do that. Friday night. Got to break the Sabbath. It's just a game. On and on and on. So yes, we have to be a living sacrifice. There's things that we have to give up. There's things we have to give up. We've seen the living faith of Joseph. It was not an intellectual faith. It was not only in his head. He didn't just believe. His actions showed his belief. He demonstrated acts of faith and service as evidence of his faith. When our faith is tested and proven to be genuine, we are positioning ourselves under the blessings of God. And we must not forget that following God will result in those blessings that we'll not only enjoy in this life, but also in the life to come. As we conclude, Joseph's story is one rich with many lessons. You can go through and read it several times, ponder the circumstances, look at it from different angles, because it can apply in many different ways. Lessons we can learn is that we need to give consideration to our interactions with others, especially our speech, even when it's true. Maintaining a close relationship with God and giving him credit wasn't our doing, it's God's doing. Not only resist temptation, but avoid sources of temptation, those questionable circumstances that don't seem like they're that big of a deal. What's the difference between a big sin and a small sin, right? If sin is sin, what's the difference? What's the difference? The fear of offending God must be the worst thing we can imagine. How wonderful that would be if we could have that idea burned in our brain. The worst thing we possibly could do would be offending God. How much better this world would be. If we really desire to be like Christ, the time will come when we are punished for doing what is right. But like Joseph, we got to stay the course. Stay the course. Just because you live a godly life doesn't mean you will always be rewarded for doing right. Sometimes you will be chastised. Sometimes even God will chastise us, even when we're doing right. Because he's got to know that we would truly yield to him, that he can trust us. Because he has the ultimate reward to give to us. And he must know without a shadow of a doubt we can be trusted with that reward. Like I said, Joseph, when he first started out, he had this dream, but he didn't fully understand what the outcome of that dream was going to be. He didn't see the end of it at that moment. All he knew was that at some point his family would bow down to him. He eventually learns that and says that God had done this to save his family, to save individuals. He was, in a way, a type of savior. There are comparisons that you can make of Joseph to Jesus. We know the end result of what God has planned for us. Turn over to John 14, verse 2. John 14, verse 2. John 14, verse 2. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. He's preparing a place for us, and he's also preparing us for that place. We have to be prepared for that place. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 51. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 51. Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we will be changed. The plan is not for us to remain physical and mortal. Will we not also inherit the reward if God graces us as kings and priests? The lessons that we talked about today, from birth until that reward is given, will be a time of the pits and the time of exaltation. There will be good times and there will be tough times, but they will be times of preparation for the future. As we start another calendar year, according to man, as brought out in the sermonette, regardless of what comes our way, let us not lose sight of our destiny and apply the lessons that we learned from Joseph as we press forward to win the prize that God has for us.